Well, hello everyone. I'm Barry Kantz and I'm your host of the Home Based Travel Agent Show. And I'm honored to have you here taking a listen to the show. I really appreciate it and welcome aboard. And today in the show, we are going to talk about some business items. And I think you're going to find these really interesting and valuable for your business. So I want you to stay tuned for that. But shortly, we will have our guest on the show, Peter Klayman. And we are going to talk about just that. And until then, drop me an email, barry@hometravelagent.net, B-A-R-R-Y, @hometravelagent.net. And visit the website at hometravelagent.net. There you'll find past shows going back many years. So check that out. You can subscribe to the newsletter. And the newsletter is something you will get whenever we produce a show. It'll be the show notes for the show. And that is it. We don't sell your information. We don't spam your inbox. We don't do any of that stuff. Just send you the show notes when a show is out there and published. Okay, we are going to dive right into the show. Have a short preamble here today. And we're going to get you right into the show and listening. And I think you're going to find it interesting and entertaining. So here we go. Welcome. I want to welcome all my listeners, of course. I'm glad to have you here, and I really appreciate you stopping by and giving us a listen. And here at the virtual table with me, I have Peter Klayman, and I believe I've pronounced that right, Peter. Is that correct?
Yeah, you sure have. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And Peter is with Bottle Rocket, and we're going to explain what all that is here in a second. So. But first, I want to welcome Peter and then ask him to kind of give us a little background on what he does and how he's interested in the travel business.
Barry, really appreciate you having me on the show. So, like you said, Peter Klayman, I lead our business strategy practice at Bottle Rocket, which is part of Ogilvy Experience. And what we do is we help organizations digitize operations. So that could be helping them determine mobile applications or websites or how we might take certain parts of what used to be a very physical business and turn it into a digital business. Some key examples here just to think about is drive-through experience at your favorite restaurant. How can we automate that, make that more digital? Like a lot of times these days you're talking to a bot, you're not actually talking to a person. Or if we think about keyless check-in, favorite hotels, well, we helped SPG actually roll out the first ever keyless check-in for all of their locations and put that into the mobile application. Or large organizations like Southwest Airlines, how do you create more personalization in your mobile applications and websites? So we like to say that we sit at the intersection of physical and digital, and we have the capability to build anything needed to kind of link those two. And oftentimes, a lot of the work we do might end up being things that a consumer would never actually see. So things that are designed for crew members or bag tracking, things on the back end that facilitate employee experiences that you as a customer interact with just by virtue of your bag coming out on time, being on the right plane, things along those lines. So we have a pretty broad experience across a variety of sectors and continue to get more and more growth in the travel industry. So that's a little bit of background on who Bottle Rocket is, and excited to be here today to kind of talk a little bit more about some of the trends we're seeing in the market and how that might affect travel in the future.
Yeah, and dealing with all this broad base of companies and working with them to help them with their experience in terms of running their business and maybe helping them in terms of the customer experience as well. You've likely seen a lot of trends and a lot of things happening in the travel industry, particularly when it comes to like what's happened in the last couple of years. You know, the COVID thing and a comeback. And you know, I'm thinking we are in a comeback for travel. So what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, big boomerang. So let's just say 2020 didn't go as planned, as I would assume most it didn't go as planned. And we initially saw what we would describe, and I think anyone would experience, as a huge cutback on budgets. And everyone was just in cost containment mode. But as we started to move through 2020 and especially starting to go into 2021, people realized that there was a big opportunity and that it would be seized by individuals or firms that were able to capitalize on it. So what am I talking about? we started to see regionalization of travel. We started to see people trying to change their behavioral patterns, driving more, things along those lines. And firms started to see upticks, whether that was in the travel space around airlines, hotels. We started to see a reallocation of demand across the network. So whereas before you might have been serving long-haul routes, you started to see your short-haul routes really pick up. From a digital experience perspective, it was a really complicated time because your regulation was changing. It was dependent upon your country, state, local, municipal level rules. And that all had to get integrated into your experience. So quick example, when you go to the airport now, you check in, you have to certify that you haven't gotten exposure to COVID in the last 14 days. And you might have to submit a negative test result, do additional customs forms. Well, it's really complicated to get all that into a digital check-in flow quickly, especially if it changes from city to city or state to state. So you saw dual pressures. You saw cost containment on one side, but also higher expectations of agility within customers' digital teams to make sure the most relevant data was available, whether that's has my plane or room been sanitized and when was it last sanitized, or making that check-in process easier so we reduce crowding. And that started to spur what I would describe as like a new perspective on what innovation could be, right? The ability to quickly, rapidly iterate on so many aspects of the network from a digital experience side drove organizations to realize that they could start using these tools a lot more holistically, whether that's more personalized push notifications or emails, things along those lines. So now we're in this new moment where we're all trying to establish what the new normal is. And I think the new normal has yet to be fully determined, but it's going to be a mixture of a lot more personalized oriented travel, a lot more random trips that might come up because people have more flexibility. We're starting to see like long-term flexibility emerge as a key element to a lot of workers' lifestyle. So before the pandemic, we were looking at roughly 3% fully remote positions in the United States. Now it's looking more in the 15 to 17%. And even if you're not fully remote, you might be hybrid. Hybrid brings a lot of ability to travel on a Thursday evening, work your day Friday in some destination, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, take a vacation and fly back Monday, be back in the office on Tuesday, the office meaning your laptop in your favorite room in your house, and still kind of participate and really experience some unique things. So we're starting to see the emergence of these trends, but I would say very early days still, right? That we have so much going on and so much variability still.
Well, that adds complexity too. And, you know, if I'm traveling somewhere for work and then I suddenly think I can spend a few days here, what am I going to do? And, you know, being in the position where I am, the first thing I would do would probably be ask my travel agent, what can I do while I'm in Denver? I'm going to take 4 days after my work here. What is it that's really interesting here that you can help me with? Do you see that happening? I think I do.
Yeah. 100%. And I think where it's kind of coming from is we had this, let's take Peloton. I know it's easy one to beat up on right now, 'cause we're all talking about it, but, let's not talk about their product. Let's talk about the parable that is Peloton, yeah. High cost, good supply constrained, oriented towards a more home-oriented lifestyle, right? What used to be a spin class that you would do and you would travel to has now become a Peloton experience in your home. But at some point, consumers are starting to really desire a new balance. And that balance is a mixture of out-of-home and in-home activities. You want things available at your fingertips when you want them. And that's why Amazon and two-day delivery is becoming so dominant. But the flip side of that, when you do have time, you want to experience something totally new, totally unique. And so we started to get a taste for this from marketplace firms, whether that's like the Airbnb experiences, right? It created this I think a lot of your travel agents would be really familiar with a robust network of vendors that are capable of providing experiences. The average layperson has not historically been as familiar with that, right? They really had to dig to find something that they wanted to go action on. What they've started to learn is they can bolt this easily onto their hotel reservation, and you're starting to see more hotel firms and entertainment firms add things on, or their marketplace, or their travel agent, and then they can come into a location and find something much more robust and engaging than they historically had. And this trend is coinciding with what we're calling kind of the rise of the experience economy. And you see this in spending habits as well. So you're starting to see especially younger generations, millennials, early millennials, and kind of the Gen Z in particular, valuing, and we always sound like a broken record here, right? Because we've probably been talking about this for 5 years. But it's important because it's actually coming to bear. Like, millennials represent the largest disposable income category in the United States now. Gen Zs are rapidly approaching that clip. They will much rather spend on a robust set of interactions that are non-replicable than they would on some type of hard good that they might have purchased in the past. And that, the data supports this consistently. That creates a big opportunity for a more interconnected travel experience that's much more hyper-local, oriented towards food or culture experiences. But of course, each of them are kind of have their own, you know, the old packages aren't going to work for them, right? They want something right. That's personalized to their needs and wants. And that creates a ton of opportunity, but also a lot of complexity, like we started by saying.
Very true. And I've noticed that trend. You know, I follow a lot of YouTubers, and you know, I can see, you know, the things like van life and sailing, and you know, all these experiential types of activities that the Gen Z, the Gen Zoomers are engaging in, and then showing people what they're engaging in on YouTube. It just exploded out there. And that's probably the microcosm of what's happening in the real world.
100%. And that's where, like, that creates a lot of opportunities as well, right? We like to say that one of the things we look at quite a lot is the funnel, right? And we always talk about a very traditional funnel, awareness all the way down to conversion. That's not at all accurate anymore. It's much more of a circular funnel. So you might have somebody come into your business at any given point. They might convert once, but how do you turn them into a lifelong customer? What elements do you have to do to, in the pre-trip, in-trip, post-trip period, to ensure that the next time that person is considering any type of experience, they would come right back to, you know, your organization, your agency, whatever that might be. And YouTube, TikTok, right? These are all becoming big parts of that. How do you form broader awareness by unique partnerships or influencer-oriented things without it being insincere, right? And that's why you're starting to see more and more micro-influencers as well. You talked about van life. I think that's a great example. Van life, I would still consider relatively a micro-influence category. It's just rapidly growing and has a lot of really big names in it. And yeah, you saw a lot of this coincided with, like, that climbing movie, Free Solo.
Yeah.
Alex Hunnell lives in a van, and that became a huge part of, like, the popular conscious. So it's like these trends are getting shorter, they're getting more localized, they're getting, so if you have some type of unique experience, let's take this, like, all the way to ground. Let's say that you host brunch and yoga with llamas. I am sure that there's a brunch yoga expert out there that has 10,000 people that love their content that might be the best fit for that service. Now, it seems so extreme, right? It's such an extreme example, but that's kind of what this new content aggregation platform experience across YouTube or TikTok, Twitch has started to give us. And that's before we start talking about, like, the new Web3 iteration of Metaverse and all these other ways that people might find content. But, you know, that's still a little bit ways off. So we could stay in the physical for now.
Right. In my past podcast, I mentioned what I saw as a trend, maybe of travel agents offering their clients a VR headset and then showing them, you know, the experience that the travel agent is offering to them in virtual reality. And, you know, I do
this
think
no
that
joke.
People are going to expect that.
Yes, especially on the ultra premium category, right? That is a,
yeah.
And you see it happening in real estate as well. You're starting to see greater and greater integration of like tour the home before you arrive in real estate on that premium price standpoint. Same is going to be true. There's going to be a broad expectation that you're going to be able to try before you buy, especially when the barrier to access is quite high. Like a $10,000 trip is a pretty big barrier. That might be the one big trip someone takes over a three-year lifespan or a three-year, right, you know, cycle. You're going to need to provide access in those situations.
Yeah, yeah. People are going to want to know in a virtual realm what they're going to experience by spending this $10,000 or $20,000.
And then for some individuals, they're going to want to be able to actively demonstrate to others that they have done that. And how do you make that more personalized? How do you create shareable moments as well, right? Because that's a key to the next iteration of customers that might follow that customer you've already acquired.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Yeah,
yeah.
Technology is really, really changing things. And technology is incorporated, especially for the millennials and the Gen Zs, it's incorporated into their life. But, you know, on the opposite side of this, and we talked about this a little bit in my previous podcast, there's also a trend towards the high touch, where people want experiences with cultures. They want experiences with real people, sitting down to dinner with a family and talking to them about their life and their lifestyle. So, you know, along with that experience of high tech, people are going to want the experience of the personal, the high touch.
Yeah. And you see this too in the research as well, right? There's a broad awareness, especially among millennials, about the fakeness of certain parts of social media, but there's also a broad susceptibility to that fakeness. So it's a duality, right? It's known that there's elements that are not portrayed accurately, yet at the same time, there's a desire to engage with that. So when you unplug, when you do eventually get into a unique area, how can you more broadly engage with that local experience and that local culture? That's going to become more and more of an aspect that people seek out and travel because it's the antithesis of their daily experience.
Yeah, and for travel agents, I think the opportunity here is to that if you're arranging tours, that you may want to incorporate some of those experiences with local families, where your clients have an opportunity to sit down and have dinner with a family in that location, or experience something unique about the culture that they're traveling to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is you're starting to have a lot of data sources you can scrape to see what resonates. So just to bring this example to ground, if say you wanted to buy a rental property, the first thing you might do in that process is go on VRBO or Airbnb or another platform that has rental properties and see which ones are in most demand. You know how frequently they're booked, you know their price point. Now we're starting to have experience-oriented platforms that give you all of this data as well. So how do you mine that data? What does best in Denver? What activities do best in Denver? There's platforms you can mine that data for that's publicly available now that you as a travel agent could build a repository of experiences off of with real data. There's a lot less guesswork in an environment where you have access to real data. You just have to be keen on how you acquire that data to help build your product portfolio.
No, what are some of those data sources?
I mean, you know, I would say Airbnb experience is a great place to start, especially for more local-oriented things. I don't think it's yet caught up on those international travel destinations, but we also see international travel lagging, right? We're still experiencing a big drought in international travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could go on, you know, what are your most tagged locations on any of your social media platforms when it comes to these some of these unique areas? That gives you some interest, right? What are some things that are highly tagged, but tagged by people with low follower counts, which might indicate more of like a saturated experience? Think you know, maybe Grand Canyon, probably a poor example, but there's that bend in that river that everyone goes to now, so much so that they had to shut that bend in the river down. Well,
oh,
before
confluence?
That bend in the river was widely known. Yeah. Before that bend in the river was widely known, there were a few people who had tagged it with higher follower counts, right? So how can you mine that information and look for places that aren't fully saturated? So you're looking for high follower count, low total tags for certain locations. You can look at that and start to build a repository of like what might be the next big hot thing from an influence perspective.
Yeah, and I know Google offers a service. I haven't seen it for a while, so maybe, hopefully they still offer it, but most searched for terms, you know, they rank their searched for terms, and you can see what people are looking for, and they break it down into categories like travel and such. So that's another location.
I think it's keyword rank, something like that.
Yeah. Yep. You can look at keyword rankings and that type of thing. So Google has a ton of data that's available, and it's interesting. You know, things like you said, things like Twitter. You can just do Twitter searches and kind of mine that data and see what people are looking for in terms of local experiences or any kind of experience. Yeah.
The scouting is totally different now, right? The way you scout, you don't go to a location and do a bunch of tours as an agent to try to scout what's viable. You go ahead digitally ahead of time and build a list of places you want to experience and then validate
that. So it's more than just the familiarization trip that a resort may offer a travel agent. You know, the travel agent may want to do some of that data mining before they take a fam trip, or maybe create their own fan trip as a result of some of the data mining that they've done beforehand. And say, hey, this looks interesting, let's see what it's all about, and then maybe offer a specialization in that area for that particular experience, which is not a bad idea.
Yeah, and you're talking about specialization, that's always a really great place to stay for a second, because what we're starting to see is niches have never been easier to really occupy. So it might be a future state where you don't go for that broad audience segment. You go for a very specific group of individuals looking for a very specific need state. That might drive longer long-term staying power than trying to be everything for everyone. Because if you have tools to connect with those individuals, like we talked about earlier, like if you find an influencer and you're the llama travel expert, of course, ridiculous example, right? But it brings it home. Partner with them and create a whole product offering around those needs of that customer base might be far more successful than trying to compete with a big box or others who are going to have a much broader reach, but a lot less specialization.
Absolutely, and that brings up something that I wanted to ask you about. And this question actually comes from a podcast that you are a part of. It's a podcast called Liftoff, and one of your guests talked about commoditization, and that commoditization is a death knell for a lot of businesses. And you know what you just said, I think, is a way to break out of that commoditization trend. Would that be correct?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And you have to be very aware of this. It doesn't take much for large players to muscle into new spaces these days. So your staying power, your competitiveness, is oriented towards the strength of the customer relationships you build and your ability to rapidly iterate around those customers' needs. And those customers' needs will change over time. But if you form relationships with those customers and you figure out a way to aggregate data, how was your experience? Where could it have improved? What parts of that experience did you enjoy? What parts of the experience were a little bit lacking? It's not just NPS, right? We think a lot about Net Promoter Score very frequently. Mm-hmm. But especially when we're building digital experiences or a hybrid digital physical experience, we like to say that customers evaluate the brand through the whole product experience. So let's take this home to like the most extreme use case, healthcare. What we find is that if you have a hospitalization event and you go to your primary care physician, there's some type of emergency, the ambulance comes, picks you up, you go to an ER setting, you go to outpatient, you get checked out. If someone was rude to you at the checkout desk for outpatient, towards the end of your entire stay journey, I know it's not a great scenario because no one wants to be at the ER.
Yeah.
You would rate that entire experience much more negatively than if someone had been rude at the very beginning of that experience, right? Our brains are very simple, and we don't equate the seriousness of things, right? You might have had an excellent standard of care, which should, from our perspective, be the thing you rate your experience off of. Did you get better? How well were you treated? But there was some moment where there was a breakdown in your experience towards the end of that experience, and that dilutes your perspective of the overall experience. So what does this mean from like a travel perspective? This means that you're now accountable for the entire travel journey from your user's perspective, even though you don't control that whole flow. And that's really a great opportunity because you get to learn more about what works and doesn't work, and you can get feedback from your real customers, but also a huge risk because how are you supposed to influence whether or not a flight gets canceled because of weather? You can't.
Right.
So there's so much you can't control in that experience. And now there's more and more expectation from consumers that, especially in a, like what we would consider an area where there's ample opportunities for you to do self-service. If you are going with a non-self-service option, you need that turnkey experience and you need reactiveness when there are negative things. Now, there's some other side of this data that's hopeful, which is if immediately following that negative experience, and say, hey, we know you might have had a negative experience, this one's on us, or something like that, some small gesture of very little value, that will actually turn that person's whole experience around. So if you think about Net Promoter Score, if you have somebody who is a detractor, a 3 or 4, and you convince them of the value of a product, and they turn to a 7 or 8, they'll be much more high advocates of that product than if you had somebody who all along liked the product. It's a very interesting phenomenon. That same thing is true here. So if you had somebody who had a negative experience and you as a travel agent were able to intercept that experience, acknowledge that breakdown, and provide something of a little bit of value, in the long run, they'll come right back to you as well, right? Because you've intercepted that commoditized experience. You've provided some point of unique value. You've differentiated them as a consumer. You've recognized them personally. And you've created a feedback loop where they want to come back because that's the experience they're going to come to expect.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that makes so much sense. And just to jump backwards here a little bit, for people who don't know, Net Promoter Scores, those are the things that you see on a website typically when the question pops up, how likely are you to refer me, my service, my company, to your friends? And it's usually a 1 to 5 scale, extremely likely, down to not likely. And that's the Net Promoter Scores, and a lot of businesses use that, a lot. It's just out there all the time, and I know you've all seen that, but that's what the NPS, Net Promoter Score, is. That idea of intercepting the bad experience to differentiate yourself from becoming a commodity is really a key point that I really like, Peter. And that's so important for the travel advisor to do and to understand. And I know a lot of travel advisors do this. So that's something to be keenly aware of, I think. You know, I've lost my train of thought. I had a question I was going to ask you, and it just kind of disappeared on me. So maybe it'll come back.
All good. Yeah, and that's, yeah, it's so interesting. The more things become digital, the more we value human experiences as well. And that's something that really important to remember throughout all of this is oftentimes a great human experience can be exactly what's missing from a great digital experience. And we work really hard in our organization to bring those two together. And we'll give you really small example that's probably something that everybody on this show may or may not have experienced, but it's very relatable. Have you been to a Chick-fil-A lately?
I've been to a Chick-fil-A once in my life, and it was a great experience.
Okay. Have you driven past one and seen how long their lines have been through drive-thru?
Actually, when I went to the Chick-fil-A, my one experience with Chick-fil-A, I happened to talk to one of the company employees, who we actually thought was the owner, he was going around talking to the guests and interacting with them, and he was interacting with us. And he was kind of giving us some of the statistics for the people, for the numbers of people they serve in the course of a day. And it's multiples of the numbers of people McDonald's serves in a day. And it was just fascinating. But that was part of my experience, and I valued that.
Yeah, very personalized. So if you've been to a drive-thru recently as well, you'll notice that someone will come and talk to you every 3 to 5 minutes, even if the drive-thru takes 20 minutes. And that's by design. And that is because humans' perception of time is distorted based on interactions with other people. So if you are in that line, you talk to four people, you would tell somebody after waiting in a 20-minute line that you waited in a 15-minute line, versus somebody who waited in that same 20-minute line without ever interacting with somebody would have told you, hey, I might have waited for 25 minutes. Very interesting. So Chick-fil-A is a great example of that white glove, at scale, personalized interactions. You had one, and most people who've been through a drive-thru had one, but they might not even know that that was by design. It feels so natural that it doesn't feel manufactured. I think that's always like a really relatable experience first organization to go interact with, to kind of start to get your levers turning on how this might relate to your business.
You know, as you said that, the experience, the discussion that we had with this employee that walked up to our table was very natural, didn't seem anything by design. And, you know, I this was a few months ago, and I remember it clearly, and it was a positive experience.
And how many places have you eaten since then, and yet you still remember that one?
Yeah. I
and it was a low price point. On top of all this, this was no Michelin star restaurant where you would come to expect that service.
My wife and I, we eat out a lot, and we're down here in South Florida, so we quite often go to some fairly high-priced restaurants, and the experience at Chick-fil-A stands out more than experiences that I've had at the more expensive restaurants, which I didn't think of that until you mentioned it, but yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, you know, and we worked with them from 2015, I think, till 2018 to help them build their first mobile ordering experience. And they have brought that service-first mindset to every conversation we've ever been in with them. Like, this is their ethos. This is their competitiveness. So this goes back to what you asked me about how to prevent the perception of commoditization. Know what you're really good at and ingrain that into every part of your service offering.
So for the travel advisor, I'll throw this out to you, what they're good at is personal service, and the last thing that the travel advisor probably wants to avoid, well, the first thing they want to avoid, I should say, is not staying in touch with their clients. They should reach out to them, make it feel very natural, and say, you know, how's things going? And, you know, just a natural conversation. And that, I think,
and
that
I would even go further than that, and I would say the travel advisor needs to be aware of the preferences of their customer on how they want to communicate. Is this somebody that really likes to talk to you on the phone? Do you want to create a way, no matter where they are in the world, to be able to talk to you? Do you want to send them a SIM card ahead of time so they can always get in touch with you? Do they want to communicate over Telegram or SMS or WhatsApp? It doesn't matter how inconvenient it is for your business. It matters how convenient it is for your customer.
Oh, very good point. Yeah. Yep. You know, I thought of the question that left.
Okay.
Me, and it's come back. Where would you put showing gratitude to a customer in this whole mix? As a travel advisor, is it, you know, I know it's good to show gratitude to a customer, but how would you go about showing gratitude, and what do you think the impact would be for that customer when I do show some gratitude?
That's a good question. This is a hard question. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and then I'll answer your question. Where in the travel, so let's look at travel advisors, and let's look at their customer's journey. You have that pre-booking and booking phase where that customer has made plans with you. You have that experiential phase where the customer is being taken care of by a variety of other vendors within the ecosystem. And then you have that return home experience. Where in that experience would you say that the customer of the travel advisor is at the highest high and the lowest low?
Probably when the lowest low, I would say as they're waiting to travel, waiting to get on a cruise ship, waiting to get on an airplane, waiting to check into a hotel. I think the waiting piece might be the lowest low, or maybe waiting to hear from their travel advisor about what's going on with my reservations.
I would also say that when you get back to reality, that's also a pretty low moment as well, right? Because you're coming off
true.
This high of being on a travel experience. So waiting is a hard part, then there's things that you can do to build excitement around the trip. And there's great ways to say, and this could all be automated, by the way. So we're talking about showing gratitude, but let's just talk about some automation workflows that make sense. For the 2 weeks ahead of time, you could send every 3 days an email about the weather and other things, or a live stream of what's going on at that location, or things just to build that excitement around the destination. And then when someone returns, this would probably be the place I'd want to show the most gratitude. And I'd want to show that gratitude in a personalized way. So if you go to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, what is something that's really typical of that area and that culture, that's that like $5-$10 price point with a handwritten note? Could you send that to the guest that arrives at their house 5 days after they get back? Right? Little things like that are moments where you really want to intercept and drive. But once again, it can't feel like a one for all. The other trend that's all like an undercurrent to everything we've talked about here is personalization. And personalization dictates that you have to create unique experiences for that individual, or they must perceive that it's unique to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I like that. I like that approach. You are with Bottle Rocket, and Bottle Rocket offers a service to people. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what offerings your company has to the world out there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, our specialty is helping organizations determine what experience. We like to say there's a life cycle of an experience. First is around the strategy. Why are you building something? What is the pain point in your business that you're looking to solve for? And maybe we don't build anything. Maybe we create some integrations between various software platforms, or we build some type of new employee experience that helps them get over some major hump or challenge in their business. So there's a strategy that's associated with that. And when I say strategy, I mean it from the lens of much more on the practical. When we're gonna go develop something, when we're gonna go build something, what are the key questions we must answer first to determine we wanna go build something? And when we're talking about projects here that we work on, we're talking about pretty large engagements for large organizations. So just to appropriately categorize, there's oftentimes a lot of constituent parts that go into this. We're world-class best when it comes to design and user experience. So helping individuals translate a really complicated user journey. How do we get them through each step? How do we ensure that conversion stays high? Things along those lines. We have people both in the experience design and visual design space that help our clients work through that. We also have the ability to build experiences, so web, app, wearables, you name it, we have the ability to do it. If we wanted to do some VR, AR, we're not quite there yet to your metaverse comment earlier, but you know, when the time comes, we have the capabilities to do all that. And then lastly, and I think this is, you know, probably the most relevant for the audience today, is a lot of the things we've been talking about are what we categorize as growth. So growth is, how do you increase your acquisition of customers? How do you drive higher conversion rates? How do you drive engagement during the course of their life cycle of the interaction with your brand? And like I said, This is not one trip. This is many trips, right? You want that customer coming time and time again. You want no consideration to happen when that customer is saying, oh, well, I want to take a trip. How do I start? You should know the answer to that question. And then ultimately that drives retention. And that can be done. We like to say there's a lot of marketing technology tools that we can put in play to do this. And we create experiments and use the scientific method to help determine what works best. No one will tell you what works best. To your previous example of showing gratitude, I have no idea if it would be more helpful to send an email, a text message, a handwritten letter, a letter and a gift, a UPS package, or an Amazon package. But what I do know is you should do all six of them. You should ask customers what their experience was. And then based on feedback, you should scale up the idea that wins. And that's kind of how we apply to all things growth related. So that's kind of what our services are across the spectrum. And we help a lot of organizations kind of drive their best outcomes, regardless of where they are in their maturation of their digital solutions.
Oh, great. And, you know, if people wanted to learn more and maybe interact with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, you know, I would say feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Peter Klayman, K-L-A-Y-M-A-N. If you want to learn more about our organization, you can visit BottleRocketStudios.com, and you can learn a little bit more about the work we do and things along those lines. So if you want to reach out to me, hit up LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about the organization, you can check us out online.
You know, and I would also say if for the listeners, if you want to learn more about things just like we've just talked about, check out Peter's podcast. It's called Liftoff, and I'm sure you can find it just by searching Liftoff in your favorite podcast app. It's a great podcast. I've subscribed to it.
I appreciate that. Barry, you've been at this longer than I have. I'm still bad at the self-promotion aspect of podcasting, but yes, you can find us at Liftoff by Bottle Rocket and learn a bit more. We have a variety of guests from a lot of different industries talking about trends and how technology impacts their day-to-day. Try to keep it pretty broad and addressed towards regardless of your technical abilities, hopefully you can take something away from it.
Yeah, and I'm positive you can, just from my experience in listening to that podcast, Liftoff. And yeah, is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that we should be talking about now before we close?
I do have one thing, and this is actually a personal thing. This is not a work thing. So I do think there's a big market opportunity, especially for travel agents. And I think it's an underutilized market opportunity. We talked about commoditization. What is the most precious commodity in the market today? It's a resource of limited duration. And unfortunately, we have many of those, right? So one of the things that I practice and we practice in our household is that our travel list is segmented by climate risk. Because we know 20 years from now, we're not going to be able to go to the rainforest and, you know, we won't be able to go to Amazon. But we will be able to go to Paris. And so how are you creating experiences oriented towards a diminishing resource, whether that's going to the Arctic or the Antarctic or experiencing unique animals and species along those lines? We talked about Gen Zs and millennials being one of the largest consumer sets. They're also keenly aware of climate change. There's no debate among Gen Zs and millennials about the necessity for change in the environment due to climate change. Which also means they're very aware of the fact that there are going to be some things that will never be available for them again in their lives. And so if I was a travel professional, I would think about how that might influence my product offering and the narrative that I share with certain customers.
Very interesting. Yeah, that would be a good, very good narrative and very good product offering. I would agree. Yeah, and a niche even.
There we go.
Yeah.
Bringing it all back.
That's right. Well, you know, before we leave, I just want to say if you know, the listeners want to get a hold of me, and if you've listened for a while, you've heard this probably 100 or more times, 436 times maybe at this point, you can email me at Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at hometravelagent.net, or on Facebook at facebook.com/HBTAS. And this has been a fascinating conversation. I wish we could carry on for another hour or more. These are things that I like to talk about. I'm kind of a futurist, a technologist, and also a business person. So all these things fit into my wheelhouse. I want to thank you, Peter, for being a guest. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate for your people who reached out to me, and I want to thank them as well. So, until we meet again, which I hope we do, thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. It's a ton of fun.
All right, everybody. Wasn't that a great interview? And, you know, I do want to mention, and I think you've probably heard during the show, that Peter is a podcaster himself. And they have a great business over there at Bottle Rocket. And you might want to check out his podcast as well. And I want to thank Peter for being a part of our show. And I want to thank you for being a listener to the show. Thank you very much. And I hope to see you again. We're going to have another show coming up here in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about another business topic, a topic that is very important to your business, something that you need to have to keep your business going and running smoothly for sure. So I want you to stay tuned for that. So until then, I want to wish you all safe travels, stay healthy, and we will be back in a couple of weeks. So take care, everybody. Bye-bye for now.